Welcome back to the Movie Buff Specialist with Phil and John. And today we take a break from counting down our top 100 films of all time. And instead, we take a look back at the movies we watched in 2022. Obviously, this will be an incomplete list as John and I both have not seen everything that came out in 2022. In fact, I saw very little, I realized as I was making this list. But we'll be talking about these are the categories that we have, and we want you to all play along if you're interested. If you want to make your own, put it in the comments. Don't forget, you can follow us on Letterboxd, Jay Millsip and P43. But it's our best five first watches. So any movie from any year that we saw for the first time this year, our most disappointing movie, our pleasant surprise, a movie that wasn't as good as we remembered, our top three re-watches of movies that were not in our top 100 prior to when we started counting down our top 100 movies, the worst movie we watched this year that was from any year, the worst movie of 2022 that we watched this year, and our top five movies from 2022. So play along. Let us know what you think. Pretty divisive year 2022 has been. The Fabelmans made pretty much no money. Babylon has a 55% on Rotten Tomatoes. Banshees of Inisherin, got critical acclaim, but how many people have seen that movie? Because, you know, it's such a hard one to get into if you're not part of the masses. Avatar: The Way of Water has already hit $1 billion worldwide. Really interesting year. Very excited to talk through some of these. And I will say right off the bat that neither John or I have seen Avatar: The Way of Water. So what can we really say about that? But anyway, yes, if my mic is acting up, there's literally nothing I can do about it. We are just screwed. So hopefully it won't sound as bad in the long run as it does right now. That's all I can say. I'm going to listen to it, John. John, you take over. I'm going to mute myself. I'm going to listen to this on YouTube very quickly, and I'm going to see if I can figure something out.
All right. Well, like Phil said, we can't really be comprehensive with our 2022 review. We haven't seen every movie that came out in 2022. And 2022 was kind of a revival for the theater lifestyle again. Movie theaters running, getting their numbers back up. People are going back to see movies, and it's so wonderful because It was scary there for a little while. It felt like movie theaters might be on the way out through COVID and everything. But people are going back to theaters in droves, which is really funny because 2022 was such a lackluster year for movies, in my opinion. A lot of like the independent ones and the smaller movies hit really well. Like Phil was saying, Banshees of Inisherin had massive critical acclaim, but like no one went and saw it. The Fablemans is losing a bunch of money. Yeah, for some reason, Avatar is just picking up money left and right. Everyone's going to see it. But like Phil said, neither of us have seen The Way of Water. So no one has to get mad at us that we're putting it as the worst movie we've seen this year, because we get to avoid that whole catastrophe there.
Now, I don't know if anything changed on my mic. I can't hear it on YouTube even. It won't even play for me. So I don't know what's happening. My computer is falling apart and I'm just a part of the sinking ship. That's all that I know. But anyway, yeah, no, I don't think I'd put Avatar as my worst movie of the year, although I saw very few movies this year. So maybe I would have ended up putting it as my worst movie of this year. But anyway, what should we start with? Should we just start with worst movie of 2022 since we've already hinted at it so much, John? Sure. Do you want to just start off there? Now, we did this same podcast for 2021, and the only difference was for movie that was better than we remembered. We only did one. We didn't do multiple. Last year, for the worst movie I watched of the year, I said Hillbilly Elegy. Hillbilly Elegy was a steaming pile of shit, and I gave half of a star, and it was very close to being worse than Lady in the Water. But instead, so this year I don't have the same vitriol. So the worst movie of 2022 that I watched was DC League of Super Pets, and I had to sit there and watch that with my wife and mother-in-law, and they were both enjoying it. I had to pretend like I was really into it. And the whole time I was like, how am I going to get out of this situation? Like, am I going to need to go take like a bathroom break? It was one of those days where my in-laws live near a White Castle, and I wish I'd eaten that prior to that movie, because it would have been a good excuse to be away for 30 minutes. Because I would have just been sitting on the toilet for anybody who hasn't had White Castle. But DC League of Super Pets, as somebody who doesn't really like, superhero movies, the only thing that could be worse than a superhero movie is a bunch of dogs in a superhero movie, as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, just did not appreciate that movie very much at all. Although I still gave it 2 stars. It just kind of speaks to, I didn't really see that much this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was going through all of my 2022 views, And a lot of the superhero movies are coming up pretty low. And I was like, I'm going to put another superhero movie as the worst movie I saw this year. But then I remembered Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the remake.
I didn't even remember that came out.
Yeah, exactly. It came out on Netflix in like February or something like that. And it was a steaming pile. It was so bad. It didn't understand anything of what the Texas Chainsaw Massacre stood for. It brought back Sally as a character, despite the fact that, you know, the actress is dead, and they did no justice to her whatsoever. It was so bad, just a disgrace to the franchise in general, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't even know it came out. So thanks for the update, John. I had literally no idea.
Yeah, so. It was just in that phase. I was watching a lot of horror movies. It came out and it just kind of like tried to play on like the idea of gentrification, but there are so many better horror movies that have been playing on gentrification in the last 2 years that this one just missed the mark completely.
Yeah. When did that come out?
February.
Okay. Maybe that makes sense why I don't remember it, but yeah, I had no
idea. It was like right during the middle of us getting ready for the awards, like the Oscars last year and everything. So okay. There are a lot of other movies to be watching at that time.
You're saying it wasn't an Oscar movie? Is that what you're trying to tell me right now?
That is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Wow. That is mind blowing. I'm very shocked. Very, very shocked. Let's see if this is why. Did that change anything?
You sound good right now.
I sound good now?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if that changed anything. I have it. I don't know. Like I said, my computer's all messed up, but anyway. All right. So there you go. So stay away from DC League of Super Pets and stay away from, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. No. What's it actually? Is it called Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah. So the only difference between this and the original title is the absence of the article "the." So this was just
funny how they Texas do that with Chainsaw Massacre. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They love to barely change the titles to movies and try to like do them, and then you accidentally go to watch one, and now every time you say Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you're going to get that instead of the 1970s one. And
yeah,
why do they do these things to us, John?
They just want to make our lives a little more difficult.
That's all they're trying to do. That's it. Yeah. All right. So we did our worst movie that we watched this year. Let's get into our. We'll kind of break this. We'll bounce around a little bit. I feel like that'll be a little bit more fun. But what was your pleasant surprise? Now this could have been from any year. But what was your pleasant surprise from this year?
So I was thinking about it and. With pleasant surprise, the way I kind of looked at it was like I had to have pretty low expectations for this movie, or it was a movie I'd watched that I wasn't too high on before. And I was kind of humming and hawing about it for a bit. But in the end, what I came down to was Dazed and Confused. That movie was so much different than what I expected. And like looking back on it, I should have known it was going to be good. But I just thought I had this misconception of that film being this like stoner comedy the entire time. Like for my entire life. And then when I finally sat down and watched it and realized it's more like this hangout movie that's really focusing on, you know, adolescence into adulthood and things like that, it just hit so much harder than I thought it would. And it was just so much better than I had ever anticipated.
Yeah, I love Dazed and Confused. I mean, you know what the problem is when you forget that Richard Linklater has something to do with it. You know what I mean? Because if that wasn't a Richard Linklater movie, then yeah, it probably would be, you know, meh, especially coming out during that era. The 90s had a lot of really bad stoner comedy type movies, you know, or bad high school comedy type movies. So, yeah. But it's got Richard Linklater's hand on it. And that always makes the biggest difference because he turns, you know, crap into wine all the time. Right. That's the phrase, yeah. Right? People say crap into wine. That's what it is.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I had two because I just think one of them, I just had to mention both of these. I couldn't, I was like, okay, which one do I not do? But then I had to laugh because I just had to do it. So I have, they could not be any more opposite. I have Cimarron from 1931, 32, whatever, best picture winner. And I have Hocus Pocus 2. So Hocus Pocus 2 was way better than I thought it was going to be. It was actually like fun. And, you know, I'd seen the Hocus Pocus movie like a million times, like everybody else has. But to sit down and like, you know, I always thought, yeah, it's like the 90s Halloween movie. Like, who cares? But the sequel I thought was going to be like so obnoxiously 2022 and just in your face. And instead, it's just Bette Midler and Sarah Jessica Parker, and I always forget the third witch's name, but they're just having a really good time. And it makes the movie fun. But my real pick for this would have been Cimarron, because it's always considered like the worst Best Picture winner. Always considered the worst. It's considered racist. It's considered like sexist. It's the audio is intolerable, blah, 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 right down the line. I really enjoyed that movie. I gave it 3 stars, which, you know, it's far from perfect, but there's a lot about it that I really enjoyed. I don't think it deserves the criticism it gets for being racist. I actually think it's kind of like profound in a different way, where there's a lot of racist characters, but the hero in 1930 something is not racist, which I think is interesting. Because that would have been an easy, just make him a racist, who cares? But I thought it was a really good movie, really enjoyable, good movie about just like a person who never feels settled in who they are. That's the story we see throughout Hollywood all the time, right? I mean, that is a tale as old as time, is this person who just cannot, no matter what they get, no matter what they achieve, they're never happy. And they just keep getting that call to do more, be more, and just have an adventure. And I really enjoyed that movie a lot more than I thought it was going to. So that was my pleasant surprise from the year. And the fact that it wasn't blatantly racist, because I was anticipating it. I really was. I was anticipating it based on all the reviews and everything I'd seen. Let's jump to the other end of that spectrum, though. And what was the most disappointing movie you watched this year?
So disappointing is one of those ones where I had to go in with higher expectations. Mm-hmm. And in this case...
Hold on, before you go, Frank Sanchez just gave us $5. The Northman was a pleasant surprise, a little long, but it's a trip. Don't worry, Frankie. I'll be talking about the Northman very shortly. We'll be getting there. And thank you for the super like there. Appreciate that. Go ahead, John.
With this one, this is another one that's like a misconception into the movie. And it's the first Mad Max, because that movie is hot, so bad. Oh my God, that movie is absolute garbage. It's so low budget, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but everything you know about the Mad Max franchise comes from the Rogue Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And the original Mad Max just does not lean into it all. It doesn't go far enough into the dystopian aspect of it. It's like this like semi-dystopian where it's still kind of like today's world, but like things are going bad, and it's not the abysmal desert world we're used to, especially with, you know, Fury Road coming out in recent years and stuff, right? It was just way worse than I anticipated it to be.
Well, the funny thing about Mad Max movies for me is I can count the amount of them that I've seen on one finger, which is Fury Road. That's it. Yeah. That's the only one I've seen. So I've never actually gone back and watched those. The 80s are definitely the decade that I've seen the least movies from. I'm talking out of like decades that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not talking about the 20s, okay? And I'm not talking about the teens. I'm talking about pretty much the 30s on, because I've actually seen a pretty good amount of 30s movies. But the 80s, I feel like with the amount of movies that came out, if you went by a percentage, I feel like the 80s is the one where I am slacking the most. And, you know, like these types of movies get lost in the shuffle. I mean, it took me until college before I watched The Evil Dead. I think it was like my junior year of college. So it was pretty far in. So, I get that though. So this was a tricky one, right? Because after this one, we'll do worst movie we watched this year, which doesn't matter what the expectations were going into that, right? Like, it doesn't make a difference. Exactly. Like, a disappointing movie, it's a movie that is supposed to be good. And mine was On Golden Pond. This is a movie that Henry Fonda won the Academy Award for. Katharine Hepburn won the Academy Award for. It has that quote about a knight in shining armor, which the knight in shining armor can shove it, because that line is stupid, just like the rest of the movie. It is horrible. Like, it is horrible. It's a Lifetime movie. Now, John, I don't know if you know what that means, because I know you're in Canada. You get Lifetime in Canada? Is that a channel that Canada gets?
I know of Lifetime.
Okay, you know what Lifetime. So, like, Lifetime, like, they do all the Christmas movie, Hallmark, like, Lifetime, whatever you want to call it. It's every time that the music would play, I was expecting the cut to commercial, and I was going to get, like, a tampon or hearing aid commercial or something that was just going to come up. It is impossible to watch. It's just flat out bad. And Fonda does the best he can with what he's got. Hepburn is atrocious. And I like Katharine Hepburn. She is atrocious in that movie. Her Oscar is a sham. It's a joke. It's just F it. It's stupid. The movie made me mad because it is one of those. I think the WGA had it on their top 100 screenplays of all time. That really makes me question if people who write know how to write. Like, it really bothers me that that movie ended up anywhere. Hate the movie. Thought it was total garbage. But again, I went in with high expectations. If I'd gone in with no expectations, it's still a one-star movie, but it doesn't go down as my most disappointing movie because the expectations were low, which is very similar to my worst movie that I watched this year. It was a movie I expected to be a steaming pile of shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, John, you haven't seen On Golden Pond, right?
I haven't. No, I haven't. And I don't know if I want to after that endorsement there.
Well, it's funny because I told my friend Steve to watch it, who you obviously know, and he went into it and then he watched it and he gave it 2 stars and said it wasn't as bad as he expected because I told him it was going to be the worst movie we ever watched. Right. So, you know, that helps it. So maybe you'll actually enjoy it a little bit. But let's do the worst movie we watched this year. And I'll start with mine because I already hinted here like enough, but I have The Broadway Melody, which was the first talking movie to win Best Picture. That movie, unlike Cimarron, is not even remotely okay. It is as bad as advertised. I actually think in my review, I said this was better than I expected, and I still gave it 1 star. That's how bad of a movie that movie was. It's very uninteresting. It's just a love triangle with a bunch of really annoying songs and whatever. It's not good. Like, it's just a bad movie. I've been going through trying to watch all the Best Picture winners. I think I have like 4 or 5 left. I'm sure I've already seen this year's Best Picture winner because I sat down and watched Babylon, which obviously isn't going to be nominated for anything. But I just think that, like, there's a certain degree of levity you have to give to movies that were made during different eras, right? Like, there's only so much they could do. If something doesn't work anymore visually, something like that, or I just watched the movie Kiss Me Deadly, where like there's a scene in it where the guy escapes from something and the cut is to the guy and then it's back to an outer room and then they cut back in and the guy's just like unconscious. Like, we can't see what happened in that scene to make that man unconscious because they didn't have the budget or whatever for it. But with a movie like The Broadway Melody, there's no need to forgive it. It's just a bad movie.
Yeah. And mine, it was tough. There were 2 movies I was considering for worst watch. And the first one was Mean Girls 2, which
okay, I didn't see that.
Was a direct-to-DVD sequel in name only to Mean Girls. And it kind of felt like whoever wrote this movie had never actually seen Mean Girls. And they just thought that the movie was about girls being mean to each other. Mm-hmm. But there was actually something worse than that I watched this year. And that was Gun, starring Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. And this movie is so bad. 50 is credited with writing the script despite not writing a single word for it, because the people who wrote it didn't want their name attached to it. It is so horrendous. One of the worst movies I have ever seen. It inexplicably has Mike Boogie from like Big Brother in it. It's so confusing and so bad. It's not worth watching. And it was one of those ones where, you know, it comes up on your Netflix, you're with some friends, you're like, okay, sure, we'll watch this. And you regret every single second of it.
Well, now I know. Now I know. And guess what? I was never going to watch it.
I know.
Never going to watch it. I don't know how you discovered it, John, but that's one of those you got to watch while you're getting hammered, right? Like, that seems like one of those movies you're getting drunk and you just want to laugh.
I don't know if that would even help. It's that bad.
Well, you heard it from John first, everybody. Because honestly, that's probably the first time anybody's actually heard of that movie was because of you on this podcast in this exact moment. I'd never heard of it. When you texted me and were like, I watched this movie that... I was like, John, I don't know what that is, but thank you for watching it so I don't have to. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get into like best 5 first watches, top 3 rewatches, and then top 5 movies of 2022, what was the movie that you watched this year that just wasn't as good as you remembered it being?
Oh, this is very easy. Top Gun. Now, I'm not talking Top Gun Maverick, which everyone's like, very wild in about this year and are loving. I'm talking about the original Top Gun because that movie is so empty. You have like this faceless antagonist. You have like zero character development. It's so bad and it's so long for a movie about literally nothing.
It's funny because with Top Gun Maverick, or Top Gun Maverick really hammers home like the visuals and all that, but there's heart to the characters too. When Goose died in Top Gun, I'm going to say it here. I don't think I even realized. I think I might have smirked. Yeah. Like, I don't even care. He died. So what, like, there was no emotion to that. And what they were able to do with the Miles Teller character in Top Gun Maverick, it really works. It's just Top Gun just doesn't do it for me. It never did it for me, which is why, it gets kind of a pass. For me, the movie that wasn't as good as I remember was Life is Beautiful. Rewatched that for the first time in a long time. I know that movie always gets praised as like a 4.2 on Letterboxd and like the top 30 on IMDb. Roberto Benigni won best actor for it in 1997. And I rewatched it. I had really high expectations because I hadn't seen it in a while. And it's kind of corny. I mean, Benigni is very good. There's some really emotional scenes in it. But if you're going to start telling me that this is like the best Holocaust movie or something, I mean, it's not even close. And that's kind of how it gets praised these days, as like almost like a feel good Holocaust movie, which sounds really wrong to say, but it kind of gets discussed as it puts a light spin on the Holocaust, right? So it finds the humor, the life is beautiful, and even the ugliest of situations. I mean, the parts in the actual concentration camp are pretty solid, but everything before it, I mean, there's like a scene where he's a waiter and he slips and falls and like stuff falls down. And I'm like, what am I looking at? Like, it's just cheese ball for too much of the movie. So while it has some really good moments, there's parts of it that are just, I don't know, boring. And it didn't live up to the hype that I had created in my own head and that the internet created for me.
Yeah, Life is Beautiful is one of those ones that I haven't gotten around to, mainly because Holocaust movies you really have to be in the mood for.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten around to it yet. So I at least don't have crazy high expectations for it. But I know what you mean, because everyone kind of talks about it, especially 97 was that year where we had, Elizabethan dramas and World War II movies. And people talk about Life is Beautiful all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, Life is Beautiful. Yeah, so that's it. 97. Didn't do it for me. So we got to do our top five watches overall last, because it will reveal my number one from this year. So like, we got to do that last. But I think instead of going into the top 2022 right now, I think we should do the best three rewatches. So these were movies that aren't in John or I's top 100 that very well could be the next time around. And so these are movies that we'd seen before, didn't make our top 100. Then we rewatched them and we were like, wow, this is, better or just as good as I remembered. So John, why don't you start with your number three? And if you have any honorable mentions you want to throw in, feel free to, but I'll do my three, then we'll do two, and then one.
Yeah, I do have a couple of honorable mentions actually. And I kind of mentioned them on the podcast throughout the year. First honorable mention is 1999's The Mummy, which I kind of just finally accepted is just one of the best action adventure movies of all time. And me not including it on my top 100 is kind of a shame in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Is that replacing A Knight's Tale?
I think it's going a lot higher than that.
Yeah, there you go.
I think it probably replaces like The Last Crusade, mm-hmm. because it's just doing what The Last Crusade is trying to do, but better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then the other honorable mention I have is Dario Argento's Suspiria, which is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. And every time I watch it, it just gets better and better. And like, the Goblin score is fascinatingly incredible. The visuals are stunning. I just love that film so much. But it doesn't quite hit my top three.
Yeah. So that was first, I want to do my honorable mentions because...
Yeah.
I forgot that. I didn't know if you were going to have them, but my two honorable mentions were Last Days of Disco, which I love, and I still think is going to end up in my top 100. I really do think it's still going to get there. Yeah. But we already did a whole podcast on the Last Days of Disco, and M, which I recently rewatched, and I thought for sure M was going to be in my top three, but there were three others. I had some good rewatches this year. Yeah. Some really, really, really good rewatches this year. So
yeah.
Without further ado, John's number three.
Yeah. So my number three, I actually talked about it a lot in the last month and a half kind of, it was Evangelion 3.1 plus 1.0, Thrice Upon a Time. That movie is such a perfect conclusion to the Evangelion series. It is heart-wrenching. It's so thematic in the loneliness. It does what the series tried to do with the Shinji and Gendo relationship, takes it to the nth degree, and it's so powerful because of it. I'm so glad I got the opportunity to see it in theaters this year. Yeah, it's... we're talking like replacing End of Evangelion here, because they are pretty much the same movie. So it's going to be very high up on my next top 100.
You could just have your top five movies be all Evangelion movies.
I could. It's possible.
You could.
But like the third Rebuild movie isn't quite on level with the other ones.
Also, it would be a very boring podcast. Very boring.
Yes, absolutely.
So my number three, so it was tough for me to choose between M, Last Days of Disco, and this movie. I ended up going with The Verdict, which is a courtroom drama. I talked about this on one of the podcasts just as my best movie I watched that week. But with Paul Newman, about he's a alcoholic attorney who pretty much just, you know, bounces around the funerals trying to get to do people's estates and things like that and separate people's wills. And he gets a case of medical malpractice, essentially. This sister and her husband are just at their wit's end. Her sister is a vegetable, is in a permanent coma, can't get up, and they just want to settle and they want it to be over. And he just keeps taking it to the man. And it sounds so cheesy, but it is so freaking well made. It is so well made. And I mean, the screenplay for that movie might be one of the top 10 screenplays ever. At least from what I've seen, it might be one of the top 10 screenplays. Like, it is so ridiculously well written. And Newman just kills it. Paul Newman just absolutely kills it. And John, before we move on, I just got to throw up Raptor here. Love Last Days of Disco. Thanks for introducing it to me. John, do you feel the same?
Well, Whit Stillman still is such an enigma to me. I've been trying to get up the courage to watch Metropolis and just, Metropolis,
you are going to hate that movie.
And like, I still don't know if I hate or love Whit Stillman. And I'm very scared to rewatch his movies because I don't know how I'm going to feel about them.
You'll like them more when you're older. You're too young. That's the problem. You know,
Not like I'm older than you or anything.
I know. Well, you know, it's mentally though, right? Like, yeah, I'm mentally just more mature. It's, I really want to quote Babylon, but you haven't seen it. And it's also very offensive, but there's quite a line in that movie about something similar to what we just discussed. What's your number two?
Number two shocked me, and it's on your top 100. I watched it this week. It's The Graduate.
I'm stoked. I was very pumped how much you liked The Graduate on your rewatch.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it the first time I watched it, but this rewatch just made me realize it is a quintessential film. And I'm not going to delve into it too deep because we are talking about it in like 12 weeks or whatever it is.
It's my number five, so wherever that is, right?
Yeah. So we've got a ways before we're going to talk about it, but you'll hear everything about that when we do get to it.
Yeah, The Graduate, it's amazing. I texted you because you had watched it just like a week ago or something. And I said, it's about to turn 56 years old. It's hard to find a 56-year-old you want to have a conversation with, right, Gen Zers? Yet somehow Buck Henry wrote a screenplay that has stood the test of time from generation to generation to generation to it's unbelievable. It's really crazy how timeless that movie is. And that movie will remain timeless until college is not a thing anymore. It really will. Like, and based on how America is going with a capitalist society that is heavy on college and things like that, there will always be a version of The Graduate that is stuck in people's minds. You know, so yeah, it's a phenomenal movie. Just absolutely phenomenal. My number two is Paths of Glory, the Stanley Kubrick movie with Kirk Douglas. Put that in there right at number two. Another one where the screenplay is just fantastic. The direction is great. Even the acting is really solid. A look at three men just sentenced to death for no reason. And it's a phenomenal, phenomenal story. Very short, which is not normally how Kubrick movies are, even though this might be my second favorite Kubrick. We were rewatching Space Odyssey very shortly, so that will help me determine what my second favorite Kubrick is. But that's high praise. But my favorite Kubrick is also, what, 85 minutes long with Dr. Strangelove. So yeah. Kubrick can make them short. He can make them long. It didn't matter. But Paths of Glory is definitely one I'm happy I rewatched. I hadn't seen it since high school. And I remember loving it in high school. But it hit even harder this time. That's a great movie.
Yeah, Paths of Glory is kind of one of those ones in that Kubrick collection that I haven't gotten to yet. It's sitting on my shelf, and I just haven't watched it.
I feel like it's probably the least seen of Kubrick's, like, well-known, like Lolita and the Killing and Killer's Kiss and that. I don't really consider, but out of like his bigger named ones, his really critically acclaimed ones, I feel like it's the least seen one.
Yeah, and it's one that, you know, people talk about, but it's that first beginnings thing that kind of throws people off there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think your phone is near your mic. I just got a voom, 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 voom. So,
okay, well, I'll make sure it's far away now.
So, cool. All right. What's your number? What was your best rewatch of the year?
My best rewatch of the year was actually my best first watch of last year. We talked about it already. I replaced my ranking of The Fellowship of the Ring with it. It's Seven Samurai. That movie is just absolutely incredible. It's a top 10 movie, in my opinion, and I look forward to watching it every time I do. Kurosawa is just such a genius, and Seven Samurai is just his masterpiece.
Didn't even make my top five first watches, John. How's that feel, huh? A little salt in the wound. That's what you get for not liking Last Days of Disco. There you go.
Yeah,
there look we at go. That. Exactly no, Seven Samurai is great, though. Seven Samurai. The problem for me with Seven Samurai is, for me to consider something to be in my top 100, I'd have to willingly like want to sit down and watch it again and again and again. Seven Samurai is friggin' long. Like Lawrence of Arabia has a little bit of an advantage over Seven Samurai because I'd seen it a couple times, which makes it easier for me. But yeah, Seven Samurai, man, that's another one. It holds up, right? It shouldn't hold up as well as it does. And I honestly prefer the first 2 hours to the final hour and a half. So,
okay,
yeah, that's fair. Yeah, my number one was Apocalypse Now. I went on and on and on about this movie on one of our podcasts where I was just praising everything. It's not a movie, it's an experience. And now let me go find my joint and become a 70s hippie. But it really is. It is not a movie. It is an experience. Characters come and go as they please. The movie just keeps plotting along. There's no arc. It just happens. We got to go get Kurtz, and that's it. It is such a devastating movie, such a haunting movie, incredibly well directed, incredibly incredible to look at. Might be my favorite Coppola movie, which is saying a lot because I think I have The Godfather at 17. So to say that, like when Apocalypse Now comes back into when I do my new top 100, Apocalypse Now out of the last 2 years, and that's with Wild Strawberries, The Father, Paths of Glory. Apocalypse Now is probably going to end up being the highest ranked of all of my non-top 100 movies at the moment that are going to get into my top 100. I think it's going to be that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, it is one of those movies that I think is kind of starting to pick up steam again because it got Netflix released the Redux of it recently, right?
It did, yeah. And the Redux I've heard is not very good. It's just like overdrawn.
Yeah. So I think it's more in the popular opinion again. I think a lot of people's experience with Apocalypse Now is more the cultural references to it than actually seeing the movie, and it's just one you have to like sit down and watch.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, that's how a lot of these movies are, right? Like I feel like we talk about them, and I mean, I think we both learned it on this podcast. There's been some movies where you've seen them and you love them, and I haven't seen them, and then I finally watched The Seven Samurai, and then there's about 90% of movies that are like everybody has seen them that John somehow hasn't seen. And, you know, that's like, but it is like, you still know what happens in them, right? Like when we sit down and we talk about some of these movies, you had never seen The Usual Suspects, but you sure as hell knew how that was going to end because
I did.
Kaiser Soze is iconic and Kevin Spacey in that movie, everybody knows. So it's like, it's funny how movies really do transcend. And, you know, we'll talk about when we get into my top five movies from that came out actually in 2022, we'll talk about that a little bit because there's a lot of odes to Hollywood that came out this year, mainly, I think, because odes to Hollywood have been doing really well until this year, where Babylon and The Fabelmans are both about to make everybody a lot more poor in Hollywood. Those two movies did not make much at all. But all right, so those were our five best rewatches. So now we are going to get into top five movies of 2022. So these are movies that had to have come out in this calendar year. And I went based on what Letterboxd told me. If it said it came out in 2022, then it came out in 2022. It's why I had, I think, Judas and the Black Messiah in my top five of 2021. Yeah. It would be funny to relook at my 2021 list that I had at the time and figure out what it would actually be now that I've actually seen a bunch of the movies. Because at that time, I don't think I had seen there were quite a few movies that I hadn't seen that ended up, you know, popping up a little
bit there. That's the interesting thing about these year-end conclusions is, you and I tend to kind of wait until Oscar nominations are out to see some of these movies. So it'll be interesting to see how much it changes even in the next 2 months.
Yeah. Because I had not seen The Power of the Dog yet
last
year. And that ended up being that and Licorice Pizza were kind of my one, too. But all right, John, what do you got as your number five?
Number five was a movie I was really hyped on when it first came out. I was really excited on it. I've cooled on it since then. Still very good. Still something I'm looking forward to watching again. It was Alex Garland's Men.
Haven't seen that.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a little different than his previous two films. Wasn't sci-fi heavy like Ex Machina and Annihilation, which are both in my top 100. So you know how I feel about Alex Garland. But still very poignant. Interesting atmospheric horror. I'm looking forward to visiting it again now that I know what to expect out of it. But super solid. At the time, I was toting it might be Alex Garland's best. It might be, but I'm going to have to watch his other movies at the same time to try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have to check it out at some point. I mean, I like Alex Garland, so I'm definitely, you know, going to see this movie at some point, but just have not gotten around to it yet, much like most of 2022. So right. It's an interesting top five. But my number five, I mean, I do have five movies that I actually really enjoyed this year. My number five, I was between Prey and Top Gun Maverick for this, and I ended up going with Top Gun Maverick, even though Prey definitely could have landed in here. Prey was much better than I expected. I'm not really a fan of the Predator franchise. It doesn't really matter to me at all. But Prey was pretty well done. I ended up going with Top Gun Maverick, though. Top Gun Maverick was just fun. And I hate the first Top Gun. I personally believe that's like a 1.5-star movie. Like, I hate the first Top Gun. I thought Top Gun Maverick was just a lot of fun. It was very enjoyable. Anything that has Glenn Powell in it automatically gets an extra 2 stars, maybe, in my book, because Glenn Powell is just amazing. And John hasn't even seen Everybody Wants Some yet, so that'll only go up from there. But I love Glenn Powell. I thought Tom Cruise was very good. Miles Teller was good. It was just a fun movie. And sometimes you get lost in that when you sit down to watch a movie. But what I also appreciated about it was I felt like there was more of a depth to it, and there was like an excitement to it that I've been numb on for years, but I feel like people are also starting to be numb on a little bit to some of the same stuff that's coming out. I mean, we see how well Avatar is doing. The second Avatar is about to do better at the box office than pretty much any superhero movie that's come out recently. And that's without having comic books and TV shows and blah, 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 blah. Just having one other movie that people really don't even talk about all that much. And I think that was what was kind of refreshing about Top Gun Maverick was we don't really know who the bad guys are. We just know that there are bad guys. And there's a lot of really incredible fight sequences. And, you know, the flying aerial stunts are amazing. But the story is there and there's a heart to it. And yeah, it's not going to knock your socks off, but it's fun. And when I sit down to watch one of these movies, I want it to actually be visually appealing. I will forever rip apart Black Panther for beating The Favorite for best production design or whatever it was. It's like Top Gun Maverick being that it was shot like on location, a lot of it, not in front of a green screen. That improves a movie so much. It cannot be overstated how much that improves a movie. So yeah, that was my number five.
Yeah. I need to get around to it still. I think it just dropped on Paramount Plus, so I should probably watch it this week or something. But
John's getting to it. He's getting there. We're getting there. what's your number four?
My number four is Park Chan-wook's decision to leave. This is a movie that came out in Korea in March, I want to say, and I've been waiting. I was waited a long time before it finally hit us here in North America, and I got a chance to see it. And boy, oh boy, it was so good. It's so like this dark, exotic thriller, like got those elements of film noir that you expect out of an exotic thriller. The ending is devastating. It was so well done. Very impressive. I'm higher on it than most people seem to be, but it was so good. And I definitely see it getting a best foreign language nom this year.
Did it get the Golden Globe nom?
It did get the Golden Globe nom.
It did get the Golden Globe nom. Okay. Okay. I'll get around to that at some point. Yeah, that's another one I haven't seen. It's funny how we've now named three movies where I haven't seen your first two. You haven't seen my first one. Although I do know we both saw my next one here. So at least we're getting there, man. We're getting to the point. We might be the only two people in America who saw this movie, but here we are, alas. And my number four, I have The Fabelmans. Another one that didn't really knock my socks off, but I found to be compelling the entire way through. I found it to be very entertaining. Paul Dano is very, very good. Michelle Williams is very good. I just don't like her character. I think she plays the character fine, but the character is irritating as all hell. I thought the story was fine. And I'm not going to say the cameo at the end, you guys, I didn't know it was coming. I do a really good job of avoiding spoilers like this. As I was telling John earlier, as some of you know, and most of you know, this is a Survivor podcast first. And Shane Powers is in Babylon from Survivor season 12. And it blew my freaking mind because I'm sitting there and I'm like, is that Shane Powers? Because he's got the huge beard now. And he's talking to Margot Robbie, okay? Like, he is having a conversation with Margot Robbie. And I'm thinking back and I'm like, I've spoken to Aris. I've spoken to Terry. They were on an island with Shane Powers, which means I'm 3 degrees of separation away from Margot Robbie. Like, that is freaking awesome. So all of that being said, though, I didn't know about the cameo at the end of The Fabelmans, and it's brilliant. It's perfect. It works so well. It's so much fun. It's a great ending to a really good, uplifting movie. Even though I wouldn't personally say that this should be the best picture winner of this year, if it were to win best picture, I'm not going to be mad about it. It's much better than a lot of Spielberg's other works that have come out recently. Although West Side Story, I think we both agree, is his best movie in a long time. But better than movies like The Post and War Horse and Lincoln and movies that are now 10, 11 years old, which really makes me sick to my stomach. But, you know, hey, we all got to take Tums sometimes. John, what was your number? Did you have The Fabelmans on yours? Have we not gotten to it?
I don't have The Fabelmans on my top five. It was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. Like you said, like I texted you, it felt like Spielberg finally kind of remembered why he makes movies with this movie. Which is something that's been lacking from that last decade with like The Post and War Horse and Bridge of Spies and things like that. So it's really interesting to see two back-to-back years where Spielberg kind of feels like he's coming back into his own.
Yeah, I agree. It's been nice. It's been a pleasant surprise because, I mean, for as much as people want to rip apart Steven Spielberg, if they do want to rip him apart, movies are better when Steven Spielberg is working at his best. And I'm going to be honest, movies will be better in the future if somebody like a Spielberg finds their way back into the realm, right? Because like you need somebody who's good like that and likable and quiet. Because I'll tell you what, now that Avatar The Way of Water came out, I'm like, man, I forgot how much I hate when James Cameron is around. My God, go back into your hole, good sir. He is so obnoxious. And look, I mean that with respect. The man knows how to sell a freaking movie, right? And he at least hasn't gone completely off the deep end like a Kanye West. But the man is obnoxious. Like, he is in your face. He does not give a shit what you think. He tries to insult you. He's already told us that Avatar 3 didn't get a single effing edit. Yeah, okay, dude. Okay. It reminds me of the Plinkett reviews of the Star Wars prequels where George Lucas in there going, we have a script, and already 5 days into shooting and everybody's too scared to talk to him because they're terrified of George Lucas. James Cameron is crazy. But we need more Spielbergs. We really do. And so I hope we find a way in there. And I feel like Damien Chazelle could have been that. But critics just hate that man so much for no freaking reason that I feel like now he's got to become a James Cameron and just rub people's noses in it. Although we won't be able to do that with this movie, Babylon, because it made nada.
Yeah.
What's your number three, John?
Oh, my number three, I'm pretty sure, is coming up on your list, too. It's Banshees of Inisherin.
I don't have it yet.
Yeah.
It's not my number three.
Yeah. Martin McDonagh, once again. I mean, we'll save the full discussion for when you bring it up. But Martin McDonagh.
Yes, because I do have it coming.
Yeah. Martin McDonagh just knows how to make a movie.
Yeah. Martin McDonagh, he's nailed it for me. The only one I didn't love was Seven Psychopaths, and I even liked that movie, but he's not that. Martin McDonagh, Damien Chazelle, build into my number three, which is Babylon.
Yeah.
Damien Chazelle has not missed for me. I know a lot of people were a little lukewarm on First Man. I thought First Man was very good. I think it's a very underrated movie. I think coming on the heels of La La Land, there was nonsense backlash of La La Land. I remember I was working in LA at the time, and the LA people who were complaining that like it wasn't their LA because it was about two white people and stuff like that. I was like, get over yourselves. Like, stop. You're working in an office with 14 white people and zero minorities. Like, stop acting like this. I hate you. And so I always hated those complaints that were coming on with La La Land. You also had the complaints about what was it? That it's not fair that you say you can have the arts but not love, and it's got to be one or the other. Why can't you have it all? It was such an anti-LA movie.
Yeah.
And critics really did not take well to that, and found a way to prod at Chazelle, who was about to be this like big, big director, being that he had made Whiplash. Now he has La La Land. I mean, this guy's batting 1,000. And First Man kind of got ripped, I feel, for really no reason. And I'll tell you what, if First Man got ripped for no reason, Babylon is that to the nth degree. Babylon is freaking epic. It is epic. It might go higher on my list. The two movies I have ahead of it, one is Banshees, which we'll get to, but the other one I don't want to say yet, but I really, really love those movies. Babylon could go higher. It's just a lot to take in after 3 hours and 9 minutes or whatever the hell it was. And I literally just watched it. I watched it. I got out of the theater 1 hour and 45 minutes ago. Margot Robbie's fantastic. Brad Pitt's fantastic. Oh my God. And now I look like the asshole because I can't think of the lead guy's name. Diego Calva is fantastic, but I personally think, and he's got a very, it's a minor role that kind of parallels all these other characters, is Giovanna Adipo, who was in The Leftovers. He's great in The Leftovers, but he got a very small role. He gets a bigger role in this movie. His character is fantastic. The one thing I will say, and I said this to my wife when we walked out of the movie, because I loved it. She was okay on it. She thought that there's a Tobey Maguire scene in it that just goes so overboard. And she said that that just lost her, which was funny to me because the movie literally starts with an elephant shitting on somebody. But and that is not metaphorical, people. That is literal. But I loved it. And when I walked out of it, I thought about all the critics and I thought about where Chazelle's at and all that. And I thought about what Chazelle's been doing with movies, right? Because Whiplash was very much about jazz and his passion for jazz. La La Land, his passion for jazz and movies and relationships. And this movie was all about his passion for movies. And I just turned to my wife and I said, the one thing he has that the critics will never be able to take away from him, that they'll also never have, is he loves movies. And they can't take that away from him. And they'll never love movies the way Damien Chazelle loves movies. He doesn't give a damn what genre it is, any of that. He loves movies. He's not trying to impress anybody. He is just, but he impressed me. It worked. I don't know how he pulled off the direction for half of this movie. He should be a shoe-in to be nominated for director. He should win Best Director based on what I saw this year. He won't even be nominated, but his direction is freaking ridiculous. In this, you feel like you're in the 20s in this movie. The opening party scene is out of control. It is out of control, and yet you know everything you want to get from every character and what every character wants for the rest of the movie. He sets up 3 hours in 35 minutes of pure insanity, and it's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's probably going to move up in my mind, and this is a movie that I will definitely be rewatching, much to the chagrin of my wife, who will just have to go in the other room because I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to watch it a lot.
All 3 hours of it.
All 3 hours, nonstop.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but I am looking forward to seeing it. Despite, you know, how I'm not the biggest Chazelle fan, I am looking forward to it.
Yeah. But you know, hey, we all have our problems, right? You don't like Whit Stillman, yeah. You don't like Chazelle. You don't like caviar. Like, what's the problem here, John? I've never had caviar. Story. I don't know. I don't have caviar, but what's your number two?
Well, you just saw your number three. I just saw my number two. And like you, this is a movie that has the potential to rise over my number one. I need some more time to meditate on it, but it's After Sun. Oh, my God. Well, A24 is killing it this year. And After Sun is just so, so deep hitting. It's another super depressing A24 movie, but Charlotte Wells for a debut film, absolutely incredible. What a beautiful capture of seeing the relationship between an adult and their parent as the same age through the lens of a child. It's so good. The ending is probably one of the best endings I've seen in a movie in a long time. It's so good. I sat there and I just like, it's one of those moments where you just open up, you're sitting there, you're so entranced. And all of a sudden I realized that there were tears all over my face.
Yeah, I got to watch it. I've heard nothing but great things, literally nothing but great things. And for you to have just watched it and put it your number two, and obviously I really respect your movie opinion. We have very similar taste, even if you like anime and I like Whit Stillman, but like, it's like, I've heard nothing but great things and I got to check it out. And it's funny though, that even in a year as weak as this one, and I think this is a weak year. I mean, because even the movies I haven't seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I see Tatiana Marano edits here, puts that was their favorite movie of the year. And I don't know if, John, that might be a spoiler for you, but I feel like this is a very weak year, and After Sun still isn't really getting, it's not really making any headway in the award circuit, which is pretty shocking because, again, I haven't heard anything but great things, but A24 still continues to not get that massive push that they need for a lot of their movies. Cause even a movie like Moonlight, we just talked about Giselle, you're talking about A24, Moonlight versus La La Land. Hell of a lot more people saw La La Land than saw Moonlight. And Moonlight was very well received. You know, and still is to this day. I mean, it was just on BFI's top 100 of all time. Yeah. It came out 5 years ago, 6 years ago. God, that makes me sick. But yeah, it's funny that After Sun still isn't making any headway.
It had a really quiet release. There, like the last couple of months, I found there are a lot of movies that I've wanted to see, but a lot of them have been like under the radar and really quiet. And like people just didn't know they were coming out.
Yeah. That's how it goes, man. It's frustrating. That's how it goes. So I'll do my two and my one, because my number one is Banshees. So we'll talk about that. My number two is The Northman. I went and saw this in theaters and I got there kind of late. So I had to sit kind of close, or I bought the ticket late, whatever. And I had to sit kind of close and I felt like I was in the movie, like the entire, with the loud music, the crazy visuals, the acting from top to bottom is great. Anya Taylor-Joy, Skarsgård's great. Ethan Hawke is great. Nicole Kidman is great. They're all fantastic. It's a loud, in-your-face look into the mythology of everything. It never backs away. And it gets into the mythology without ever feeling like it's becoming fantastical, even though it is becoming fantastical at points. I freaking love this movie. Like, I loved this movie. I thought this was going to be my number one until Banshees has – it was my number one after I saw Banshees. But Banshees has been living inside of me and won't leave. And it has just been killing me. And this is a spoiler for my top five watches of any year. Number five is Banshees of Inisherin. So, you know, I'll get my Banshees stuff out of the way here. But the Banshees of Inisherin is just – it just won't go away. And I bring it up so much in my normal conversation, which bothers me, but I feel like it's such a relevant movie. That's the crazy part. It's set on an island in Ireland in the early 1900s, and yet it's so relevant. There are so many times, like I went and saw Babylon today, and I'm sitting in theaters, and these three old women come in, and it was a noon showing on a Friday. And they sit down, and they're talking about how they heard this movie wasn't that good. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. And now Babylon opens with pretty much a 30-minute orgy. So, of course, that's a fun way to start. And then the title comes up and it just says Babylon. And at that point, they all looked at each other and said, well, I don't like this movie. This movie's not very good. And then they continued to sit there for 2 hours and 20 minutes and talk and talk and talk. And I felt like Brendan Gleeson, where I was like, do I need to cut off a finger to show you how serious I am right now? Like, shut up. I get you don't like the movie, but the door's right there. Go ask for your money back. Like, we're in Wellington, Florida. Go ask for your money back. So now I've really pinpointed these three old angry ladies who made me so angry. But all that is to say, Banshees just, it's so relevant. It's just so relevant. And I think about the line all the time of, I just decided I didn't want to be bored anymore. And she's like, well, you live on an island off the shore of Ireland. What did you expect? Like, it's those things of you make your decisions and you try to work your way out. But ultimately, is it that you're mad at everybody else? You're mad at your situation? Or are you just disappointed in yourself because you're not achieving what you think you should be able to achieve because you're not talented enough or you're not good enough or you're just not interesting enough? And damn, Banshees just killed me. It floored me. And I really do. I mean, at this point, and like I said, I haven't seen Everything Everywhere, which I'm pretty sure we're about to hear those words, but I really do hope that Banshees of Inisherin pulls out Best Picture at this point. It's really my, it's my top movie, and McDonough is due. McDonough is freaking
He is. Yeah, McDonough's definitely due. And I mean, I do want to back up to The Northman for a second because Robert Eggers is still killing it. Like,
yeah.
The Northman was one that I was considering as my number five this year. It's like sitting there at number six, kind of like in a tie with The Batman. I do want to mention The Batman because people kind of seem to have forgotten that movie came out this year. And boy, oh boy, was that movie good. But The Northman, it might be the weakest Eggers movie. And that's saying something because Eggers makes some phenomenal films.
And it's funny because I think it's my favorite Eggers movie. I really do. Yeah, I think it's my favorite one. And but I'd probably say all of Eggers' movies are four stars, right? How many? He's got three?
Three. Yeah.
They're all four-star movies. Him, Chazelle, you know, we're going down the line here. Him, Chazelle, McDonough, they're all really good directors.
They are. And they make some very good stuff. And, yeah, The Northman, taking, like, the same mythology that Hamlet is based off of and showing it in this, like, brutal Viking society, it was incredible. It was a spectacle. It's one that I really need to rewatch.
Yeah.
Now that I've given it some time since it came out, I really need to get around to it again.
That was an epic theater experience, though. I will say that. Yeah, just epic theater experience. But go ahead. What do you got as your one?
And Banshees. Well, we need to talk about Banshees a little bit here first because I didn't talk about it for my number three. But what incredible performances in this movie. Like, the entire cast, just absolutely phenomenal. If Brendan Gleeson doesn't win Best Supporting Actor this year,
they're talking about the guy from Everything Everywhere.
I mean, granted, also a very strong performance, but man, Brendan Gleeson is so phenomenal in Banshees. And just this idea, like you said, the entire premise of the film, this idea of, you know, who are you blaming for the fact that you're not doing anything, you're not achieving what you want to achieve? It's incredible. It's phenomenal. And the setting of like this small island off the coast of Ireland just really punctuates everything that's being said in the film.
So claustrophobic. It's so claustrophobic.
In this wide open space. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. They're trapped on an island. Like, they're trapped on an island that's got no, there's nothing claustrophobic about it. It's brutal. Great movie. All right, well, Jonathan.
As Phil's been saying, my number one this year is Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's just such a wild ride. It is so different than any movie we have seen recently. I think it has single-handedly made it so that every Marvel movie that has been released this year is irrelevant because it does the multiverse a million times better than any of those movies do. It's fun. It has incredible performances from Michelle Yeoh. Jamie Lee Curtis is hilarious in it. It's so good. And it's just so different. And that's one of the big things that really separates it from the rest of these movies this year. And like I said, Aftersun might overtake it with time after I like meditated on it a bit. But Everywhere All at Once just... It has a very heavy theme to it, but it's so fun at the same time. And it's just that the type of movie that just hits you differently.
Yeah, I'm like, again, need to check out both of those. Weak of me that I haven't seen Everything Everywhere All at Once. But when all the hype was going on, I wasn't sure. I didn't know if the hype was going to continue on. And now it seems like, okay, no, like this is like a must-see movie here. I'll definitely be checking that one out shortly. So I can see a movie directed by a man named The, according to the Golden Globes. That makes me laugh very hard because they wouldn't allow...
Wait, is that actually what they did
it? Yeah, they wouldn't allow two direct... Like, it's like not allowed that two directors get nominated, so they went as The Daniels.
Right. That's how they identify, right? And I guess that
they do identify as The Daniels, but the Golden Globes doesn't let you put like... two directors in the same movie. Because best director is one director. So that's why it's like the Coen brothers, the Daniels. They won't let you just do Joel and Ethan Coen. It's so stupid.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. But anyway. All right. So these now will be our best five first watches of the entire year. Any movie that we saw for the first time this year. As I already said, my number five was Banshees of Inisherin. So that is, you know, that's I've already spoiled my fifth. John, what was your number five?
My number five was your number one from last year. It is Wild Strawberries.
Okay.
Yeah.
And about damn time.
I know. I know. I probably should have watched it the like three times you watched it last year, but I finally got around to it. And Bergman, oh, wow. When that man makes a good movie, he makes a really good movie.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm having the big box set now with Bergman. It's allowed me to realize that I enjoy almost all of his movies. And then I'll go and I'll look on Letterboxd and they'll have like a 4.1, 4.0, 3.9. But then what'll happen is you'll get a movie that I really liked and it'll have like a 3.2. I think it's just people being like, well, it's not Persona and it's not Wild Strawberries and it's not The Seventh Seal and it's not Smiles of a Summer Night. And it's like, poor guy. Like, just like, let the man have 25 masterpieces. Leave him the hell alone.
Yeah. And Wild Strawberries, it just hits so... Again, it's all these, like, aging movies. I've realized as I grow older, I grow more attuned to these movies about aging, and they just hit differently.
Yeah, the thing with Wild Strawberries, too, and I always say, it's that first scene where his older self is having the conversation with the young girl.
Yeah.
And it's literal. Kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's flashing back. Like, no, he's there. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's just devastating. It's absolutely devastating. And I don't know. Bergman has one of the best eyes for that, the memory aspect of things. He does such a great job with it, making it feel real, but also making it feel powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we get to your number four, we might as well talk about mine because it's Everything Everywhere All at Once. I did have it above Wild Strawberries, believe it or not. But we already
can't be right on.
So we can move on. We can move on to your number four.
My number four is a movie that me and John did a whole podcast on because of John, and that's The Third Man, a movie that I thought I had seen before and discovered I hadn't seen before. I'd only seen the part on the Ferris wheel because film school is a bunch of hokey baloney. But so I'd seen The Third Man, the one scene from it, but that was it. And watching The Third Man for the first time in its entirety, that is a great, great, great movie. Orson Welles is freaking awesome in that movie. Joseph Cotton's great. The direction, the everything, the visuals, it's all just top-notch, great movie. Third Man coming in at my number four.
I mean, we've had an entire podcast about it, but it's just... I mean, to me, it's just like this pinnacle of film noir. It's so fantastic. And the fact that it's not an American film means that like some people still haven't seen it and everyone should see it because it's, I showed it to friends when we watched it for the podcast and one of them watched it again right afterwards. They liked it so much. Like this movie is just on another level.
It's funny too, like because I think film noir is such an American genre, that's what also hurts The Third Man. Because it's not an American movie and it's such an American genre. Such an American genre. All right, John. Well, what was your number three then, since now you're back in the lead?
So last year when we did our top five best first watches, we didn't have a single American movie on any of the lists. And we've already covered my only American movie and Everything Everywhere All at Once. So no more American movies for the rest of the list for me. I have Pulse. Which is the 2001 Japanese horror film. And this is a movie that I saw it, I understood it, I felt it, and I haven't stopped thinking about it since. It's so good. It is so focused on loneliness and society as a whole just collapsing. It's about ghosts and the internet and them trying to find a way into the real world because the afterlife is full and it is so dark. It's so depressing. It is a movie that changes you after you watch it.
See, that feels like it's up my alley if it's dark and depressing.
I really think you would like it.
Now, is it was the 2006 American movie a remake of this or no?
It was a remake.
And it's way better, right?
I haven't seen it yet. And no, it's not. They wanted to make, there's something about it. Wes Craven wanted to remake Pulse. And he was originally attached to the 2006 remake. And he wanted to pretty much make a shot-for-shot remake of the film. But the studio was like, no, we need this and this and this to happen. So they made, so Wes Craven got off of it, and the 2006 movie came out the way it was, which was not the same.
I'm not surprised, although it does have Kristen Bell and Ian Somerhalder, who are two very good-looking people, John. So I'm just saying, they might be better. I don't think they were just trying to put people in that movie who were very good-looking.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, my number three, I have The Purple Rose of Cairo, the Woody Allen movie. Another one of those movies is just about loving movies. And The Purple Rose of Cairo might be one of the best depictions of that ever. I mean, obviously, I have Cinema Paradiso in my number 14 or something like that. I mean, I have movies up there that love movies. But this movie is so much about just the love of movies. And it's, you know, takes place during the Depression and movies as an escape. And what if a movie star just walked off the screen? What if the character in the movie just walked off the screen? It's such a fun idea. It's so good. And, you know, when Woody Allen starts getting into that, we're going to be watching Midnight in Paris in a couple weeks here. Not that either of us have it in our top 100, but it's replacing Casablanca for John. Yeah, so when Woody Allen starts doing those, man, he can knock it out of the park. And The Purple Rose of Cairo blew me away. Blew me away. And it's so short. I think it's 80 minutes long. It is in, out, on with life, but it is it leaves such a lingering impression. It will not let you go. It is a great movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah. I need to check it out because you've been raving about it since watching it.
Yeah, I mean, it took me so damn long to watch the damn thing.
Yeah.
What's your number two?
Well, my number two is a movie I actually forgot I watched this year because it felt like so long ago. It's Drive My Car.
Oh, wow. I forgot that was a first watch this year.
I know. So did I. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, this has to be included. I spoke very highly of this movie when we were talking about the Academy Awards last year. Hamaguchi just creates this beautiful, beautiful slow burn film. And it's so emotional. It brings everything that I want in a film together. I loved it so much. And yeah, it was definitely way up there for me.
Yeah, I forgot. It's funny. I think the only four-star movie that I watched from last year this year was Power of the Dog, which would have absolutely been in my top five of last year had we done that. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't. I guess I watched Drive My Car in the new year, but Drive My Car, I think I only gave 3.5 stars. But that's like two.
I was much higher on it than you were.
Yeah, you were. You were. As you generally are with foreign film.
I am. I really do like foreign films.
Although I will be interested, I mean, not to promote our next podcast, but Wild Tales and Reservoir Dogs. Wild Tales, John, true. I'm telling you. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
I'm looking forward to it.
My number two was In the Bedroom. And it's funny because by the time I realized that Todd Field, the director of In the Bedroom and Little Children, had a movie out this year, Tar was already out of theaters. And so now I need to see Tar because I love Todd Field. Todd Field has directed three movies. That's it. Like, he's only done In the Bedroom. He's only done Little Children. And then he's done Tar. And everything else was like shorts and music videos and whatever. Takes his time. He picks his projects. But, man, he knocks him out of the park. And In the Bedroom, one of the last movies. I think Aaron Brockovich is now the only movie from 2000 on that I haven't seen that was nominated for Best Picture. In the Bedroom was the most recent one I watched out of the 2000s, right? So, like, it was Aaron Brockovich and In the Bedroom were the two. I'd always wanted to watch In the Bedroom, but it was hard to find. It was a very difficult one. What a great movie. Tom Wilkinson was robbed. I haven't seen Training Day, but Tom Wilkinson was robbed. The man gives one of the, like, just such a great subdued performance. And just a great movie. Great movie. Marissa Tomei, Nick Stahl, William Apother is great. Sissy Spacek. It's such a small, simple story. And it's so damn good. And you're like, okay, where's it going to go now? Where's it going to go now? Where's it going to go now? And it just keeps going there. And it just keeps finding its way. And it gets more and more interesting throughout. In the Bedroom was my number two. Great movie. 10 out of 10 recommend.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
All right, John. Who wants number to go one? First on their number uno?
Well, I can go number one, I guess. So I kind of cheated because I technically didn't watch this year, but I watched it right after we did last year's annual recap, so I have to mention it. My number one is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. This is it's a French film from 2018. I'm pretty sure we got off of doing this annual recap last year, and I immediately watched it. So kind of cheating, but like it's still technically within the last year. This movie is phenomenal. My God, it is heavy hitting. It's so focuses on just like this idea of relationships and building them and what society wants and what you want and the memories we have of these fleeting moments. It's so good. Definitely.
Yeah.
If you don't even like French cinema, you still have to watch this movie. It's so good.
It's crazy. I haven't seen that one yet. I've heard nothing but great things. And I just keep putting it off. I got to watch it. I'll get to it one day. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that you're number one. Although, you know, I'd forgotten that you just watched it for the first time within the last 365 days. So my number one was Tokyo Story. We talked a lot about that on one of the podcasts. Both of us had it as like our best movie of a week at one time or another. It's devastating. It's brutal. It's just such a simple look. The sound in that movie is just brilliant. It's a beautiful movie. It's very touching. It doesn't pull any punches, and it's about getting old and families growing apart and not having time for each other. And what do you do? And how do we keep them busy? And, oh, well, I can take them. So they're off your head. It's a fascinating movie. A very interesting look. Again, we talked about it with The Graduate. Amazing how these movies that came out 60, 70 years ago now are just so relevant in the simple ways, right? Like you could say that a movie like Space Odyssey stands the test of time, but none of us have, you know, traveled beyond the moon yet. Whereas with a movie like this, it's just talking about people and family, and it's all the same, man. It's all the same. And that's interesting. I love it. So that's it.
Yeah. Tokyo Story is just so good. Ozu's incredible. Like, oh my God. So good. Tokyo Story was one of my top first watches last year, and it is a film that I am looking forward to rewatching.
There you go. So that's everything we have. Let us know what you were thinking in there. And thank you all so much for listening throughout this entire year. John and I only have 18 weeks left of our top 100 movies of all time. Sofas here just put, thanks for doing a film review. I love you guys. You get me through. Thank you. You're welcome. We love doing this. This is a lot of fun. We got to think of something to do after our 18 weeks are up. Well, I'm sure we'll think of something because we just like talking movies. We'll figure something out to do. Maybe we'll make it a little bit more relevant where we actually watch stuff that's coming out now. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that'll make me actually watch things, but hope you enjoyed this. Curious to hear what you would all say you liked or best watches this year, any of that stuff. But John, as always, thank you. And happy 2023, everybody. It's a day away. That's it. Right around the corner. And go see Babylon. Please, for the love of God, somebody.